Hey, Steve, good to chat with you. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jared. It's good to be here.
It's an innovative company when it comes to mine safety. I don't know if you could be in a better spot right now. given where the industry, how much focus is on safety now.
Yeah, no, it is a very important part of the business of mining, making sure that our people go home safely every day. And yeah, we do our best to try and help those outcomes.
How long has the company been around?
We've been around since 2010.
Have you seen, the conversations you have about safety, now people are looking for companies like yours. It gets easier as you are around longer, but just in those conversations, has it got easier over the last, let's say, even 5-6 years, having these conversations with companies?
Perhaps it's gotten a little bit easier for us, but it's also, we've gotten better at having the conversations because there's no question that we have safety opportunities and improvements, but we really have to be able to help our customers to understand the economic and the efficiency benefits that our products come along with, because we don't just improve safety. We only allow a product to get through the R&D phase if it also improves the bottom line for the customer.
Right.
And that helps make it a little bit easier. So if we're having that conversation around safety and adding these economic incentives in, it certainly helps to push that barrow because everybody wants to improve safety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of questions I have. I've got actually quite a list written out for you, so hopefully it's not too many. But about your product, your product lines, some other products that you're bringing on, some projects you've been involved with. So Steve, just bear with me. For one, I'm going to give a shout out to our sponsors, and then we'll start the episode of Mining Now featuring Safescape.
Thanks, Jared.
Okay, everyone. Let's kick it off with Savinor Equipment. They supply new and used equipment around the world, from plaster to underground to ore processing plants. They have gold concentrating tables, trommels, and mineral jigs in stock now to take advantage of the high gold prices. Go to SavinorEquipment.com to view all their inventory, and remember, they list more equipment every day. When you go on their website, you will know what we mean. Zero Knox, they did a great episode recently, is the global leader in electric powertrain solutions, microgrids, and clean technology. They provide a platform for clean energy technology to come to market through powertrain solutions, development partnerships, and electrification kit solutions for conversions, all powered by Zero Knox. Their mission is to empower communities through sustainable innovation as they partner with some of the world's leading OEMs to solve the challenges across multiple continents with clear and high-performing technology, empowering a clean, innovative, and high-performing future without compromise. Learn more at zeronox.com. EPCM, they were also just recently on the show. You see a pattern here. Established in 1980, EPCM is a global engineering, procurement, and construction management firm. They deliver comprehensive solutions through EPCM engineering, EPCM automation, EPCM service and supply, and I got to check with them. I was supposed to last time and to check how to say that. Cobra, contact them to help accomplish your goals. Please email info@epcm.com. Go to epcm.com. You'll see some of their amazing projects they've done. CIM, our partner here, CIM 2022 Convention and Expo is coming back to Vancouver in person in May, from May 1st to 4th. Show off your products and services in mining technology, digitalization, equipment, consulting, and engineering. There is a whole lot of perks waiting for exhibitors, and this expo will sell out fast. If you're a researcher thinking about what mining will look like for future generations, this convention is the perfect place to present your technical papers or lead a short course. Visit cim.org for all the details. That's cim.org. SolarSet has launched a pre-assembled ground-mounted solar system, including the innovative SolarSet Fold. Our solar systems will power your residential and commercial property, and we ship worldwide. Talk to our team and learn if a grid tie or off-grid with backup battery backup solar system is right for your application. Visit solarset.com to learn more And last but not least, PowerZone, when you need a specialized team. Oh, Gowdy, this is why you do the ad reads. When you need a specialized team of world-class engineers for your oil and gas pipelines, dewatering, or a fluid handling needs, you want to visit PowerZone.com. In addition to their inventory of rebuilt pumps, motors, engines, they also have an amazing team to design and engineer your system, no matter the challenge, no matter the location. Get in the zone with PowerZone. Visit PowerZone.com. I promise you, audience, next week, Gowdy will be back to read those ads. Steve, welcome to the show. Lots to cover. You know, you have innovative products and they're unique to the market. So I want to kind of jump back to the beginning before we go into some of what Safescape is offering. Just sort of tell the company's story to kick off the show, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Jared. Safescape's unusual in that we started not as a service company, but as a product company. And the reason for that was, prior to Safescape, I worked in a mining contractor. And during my time working as an underground mining contractor, I spent some time as an airleg miner or a jackleg miner. And most of the work that I did in that role was raise mining. In North America, it might be called bald-headed raising. In Australia, it's called ladder rising. But essentially, that role is to open the voids that escapeway ladders go into, or for slots for production long-hole stoping. Because my job was to mine the raises that the escapeway ladders went into, I was often asked to go and fix broken, rusted, rotted steel and timber ladders, or smash the salt crystals off the rungs. And it was not a job that I enjoyed doing. And it was quite frustrating, because I would see these galvanized steel ladders that were installed in mines that lasted only a couple of years before they would start to fail. Mm. And during that experience, the concept of a fully enclosed modular plastic escapeway ladder came into my mind. And so I looked into it. No one had done it before. I patented the concept, and then spent 5 years trying to find someone else who would take that idea and commercialize it. Because at that time, I was a mining engineer, I was a miner, I was really enjoying working underground and running projects. I didn't really have a desire to go and become a manufacturer and sell and install escapeway ladders. But after 5 years of not being able to convince anybody that it was a good idea, I jumped out and started Safescape to develop that concept myself. So once we started to build a team and we built the prototype of the product, people could see it. Then all of a sudden they thought, oh yeah, this is a good idea. And so, yeah, Safescape started as a product company. And within a year, we had our own manufacturing facility to manufacture that product.
What do you think, you know, when you're going around and trying to get someone to pick it up, what were some of the reasons? I mean, I asked that because I'm looking at the product and it's hard, and I've got these before and after, like what they used to do and now what your product, I mean, it's hard to see why someone wouldn't think it was a good idea. So I'm actually curious, what were some of the reasons that people didn't want to look at it?
Imagination. I think certainly here in Australia, we have a tendency to believe something once we've seen it. Because so many things that work in other industries don't work in the underground environment, because of the corrosion, because of the blasting, because there's lots of really nasty sort of environmental issues around that mining environment, where you soon get to a point where you believe that it's got to be pretty special to work down here. And aside from the use of polyethylene service pipe, we weren't really using plastic for anything underground at the time. And so it was just, you can't use plastic for a structural product, forget about it. Whereas once we actually physically showed people the product, and that's what we did. We, after doing the first installation at the Fosterville gold mine in Bendigo, Victoria, we actually set up a trailer with a 6 meter segment of our escapeway and drove around, did a few thousand kilometers visiting mine sites and actually setting it up in their car park so that they could hit it with their, you know, hit it with a hammer, climb up it, actually feel what it feels like. And certainly once they see it and feel it, they go, okay, this makes sense, because it keeps the water out, it keeps the rocks out, it's more comfortable to climb, it clearly will never corrode the way that a steel or a timber and steel ladder does. So once you can actually physically experience it, it's much, much easier to take a positive opinion.
Was it when you decided to take it out to the market yourself, was it harder or easier than you expected? You know, that covering that 3,000 miles, that sort of boots on the ground type style. Was it what you expected when you actually decided to take it on yourself?
It was a mixture. I mean, I did expect to receive some pushback, and I certainly received some pushback, particularly from a few older miners who are a bit gruff and, oh, you can't use plastic, rah, rah.
Right.
There's a little bit of that action. But even some of the more experienced older people in the industry, they would sit down, they'd go quiet. And when you see them go quiet in that meeting, you know that their head's ticking away, going, hang on a second, this isn't a bad idea. Maybe we should give it a crack. And so it was actually some of those older, more experienced people that did give us a crack. And once we were on and working with them, the benefits are not just, you know, easier to climb, safer to climb, doesn't corrode. It's really fast and easy to install, and you can install it into a smaller diameter race than was previously possible. And so the economic benefit was significant for them. So they would see that, they would decide, well, the risk isn't huge for us to try this. And once we've tried it, we'll know for sure. And that's what got us across the line, because these mines don't contract for 10 years supply of escape way ladders. They do a 20 meter ladder at a time, or an 80 meter, or whatever it is that they have to do.
Right.
So it's a discrete risk that they were taking.
And now where has it grown to? I mean, right now you've got, you're in Australia, but you're also distributing in the US, or what's your setup now? What's your reach?
Yeah, we've supplied more than 50 kilometers of escape way ladders to 23 countries around the world.
Wow.
120 something mines.
Is there, I mean, does the, like, does diameter, I hate to ask too simple of questions, but does diameter change, does design change, or is this a product that you say, no, this is how it works, and the customer knows exactly what's they're getting? Is there a customized element? I mean, obviously distance and things like that. But what's sort of the setup for different types of applications?
Yeah, it's a really good question. We designed it to meet the various standards around the world in terms of design, and so that it would be safe and relatively easy to climb when you're wearing breathing apparatus in an underground emergency, which is one aspect of the product. And so because we took into account all of those things, we designed the shape to optimize one product meeting every country's or province's requirements. Now, we couldn't quite do that, because right. in Canada in particular, it's not a countrywide set of standards when it comes to underground escape way ladders. It's provincial. And in one case in Quebec, they actually have a requirement that the diameter of an escape way be larger than what the Latitude product is. And as a result of that, for a very long time, we couldn't supply ladders into Quebec. Mm. However, at a point in time about 6.5 years ago, Glencore, who had used our escape way ladders in other countries, wanted to use it in their operations in Quebec. And not being able to, they decided that they would try to change the legislation in order to be able to use it. So they set about changing the legislation. It took them 6 years to do that. They canvassed widely. You know, we supported them. We come for some meetings. We provided information, all that sort of stuff. But it really was Mian Hersa, who's based in Montreal, for Glencore, organising all of these different parties to come together and risk assess and decide, you know, is this legislation worth changing? What's the value? Determining that there is value in doing it. And then they literally went through that process for 6 years. Mm. Late last year, the legislation was published. And at the same time, Glencore started to use Latitude in their mine at Raglan. And I'm not sure how many meters they're up to now, but they're certainly ramping it up.
Yeah. I mean, it must be for a company like them, it must be so frustrating if you couldn't put that in. I mean, it's one of these products. It's almost like, it's just like show the picture of the old one and the new one side by side, and you kind of tell the tale. But so it must be so frustrating them knowing. I mean, it's labor's not cheap, drilling's not cheap, reinforcements not, maintenance, like all these things are very expensive operations. I mean, it must just kill them. They just go, no, you can't use that here. It's, you got to use this old system. Yeah. That's, I mean, it's just so clearly inadequate. So I get why they'd go to bat, but I was curious for you, just because you said of where you got started, you were working underground. And I mean, now you're essentially working with this global company. I mean, you're doing some expansion into the EV space. And just a very simple question. How is it, I guess, changed you, you know, going from that position to now running this company and going, you know, now you're dealing with stuff like legislation and all that. I mean, that must have an effect on you in a lot of, I guess, positive and challenging ways.
Yeah, I'm very fortunate to have the job that I've got. I don't think that I would make it in a large publicly listed mining company because of the bureaucracy. Mm. I really did fall into a beautiful area for me, where I can be fast and adaptive, and you know, I could work around rules. So I'm aware that there are some rules, particularly, you know, laws of physics, they matter to me, but the laws that govern a land, or the laws that govern or standards, they frustrate me. And I have to try and find a way, well, what is the intent of that legislation, or what is the intent of that rule or whatever it is, and go, okay, I'm keen to meet that intent. But I tell you what, it makes no sense to lock in a standard for an extended period of time and ignore all innovation. It really does slow down the opportunity to improve the way we do things. And so being in a small, relatively small private company, being able to make decisions quickly and decide, do we invest heavily in meeting an existing piece of legislation, or do we wait, show the value over here, and then bring it around later on and get some support? And that's the way that we tend to do it, because otherwise you wouldn't be able to make change sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's so obvious, it's self-evident, but I guess a lot, because so many standards they're set by the best information they had at the time. So probably back in Quebec, when they set that standard, that was probably because other people were cutting corners. So they went, no, you have to have it this way. We're not compromising this. You cannot have people down there if there's not a safe way to escape. But now that's actually holding back innovation, which, I mean, you can't miss the irony of it.
Yep, that's exactly how it is. And you've got to respect it. It's there because those laws are written in blood, right? They are there for a reason.
Yeah.
But if we ignore all of the developments that have happened over the last 30, 40, 50 years since the legislation was written, you're doing it at your peril. There have to be improvements available.
Yeah. Yeah. You've got another product I want to touch on, the Edge Protector. And this is kind of an interesting product, because if you looked at it, just one picture of it, you'd go, oh, it's there to stop rocks but from sliding down. But then when you look at all the different ways, I mean, widening roads, creating support, kind of an interesting product. So can you first give us the backstory? Was that right out from the offset, or when did you develop the Edge Protector?
It was 2016 was when we came up with Edge Protector. So, and as with Latitude, it was a light bulb moment. It wasn't a problem we'd identified and were trying to solve. I was drawing on the whiteboard with some team members, talking about the different, the ways that open pit mines work and defining certain words. And I was drawing a ramp with the rock bun that's on the edge of a pit ramp, and explaining what the purpose of that was. And all of a sudden it dawned on me that it's not a very good thing that we have. So essentially, when you have an open pit ramp, typically they're descending into the pit at 1 in 10 on the wall of the pit. And on the open side, there's a pile of rock which riddles out like this, and And that pile of rock will be anything from half wheel height to three quarters wheel height of the largest truck on the mine. And that's a legislated requirement around the world. And the thing is that that worked when we had 20-ton trucks. And it made sense because you would break the axle of that 20-ton truck if it drove onto that and it would just belly out and stop. But now we have, you know, 300-ton trucks and the tires are absolutely enormous and so strong. They drive straight up the bungs that we build for them, even when they're 3 meters high. They'll drive straight over the top.
Right.
And so it just didn't scale. That concept never scaled with the technology. And of course, if we look at in the rest of, around the rest of the world, how do we deal with these edges with trucks? Well, we create these static barriers, these crash barriers that you see on the sides of highways, particularly in snowy regions. And that's not going to work for a truck that weighs 500-600 ton that has 4 meter diameter wheels. It's just not going to work. You can't design a structure that's going to handle that thing.
Right.
So what we've done is created a modular cantilever wall. And all it does is it creates a vertical front face to the rock barn. You still use the rock behind it. And if a truck hits it, it can't drive over it. So it has to actually push through to get to the other side.
Right.
To fall off the edge. So there's a lot more resistance. There's an order of magnitude improvement in safety with respect to a truck going over an edge. But of course, the bund used to be this big and now it's this big. And it works better, order of magnitude better. But you don't need this space.
Right. Yeah. So, I'm looking at a chart here. Yeah.
Yeah. So you can take an existing ramp where you've got 100-ton trucks running. You can widen that ramp and run 150-ton trucks. There's a significant opportunity in increasing value doing that, but you're also increasing safety. Mm-hmm. Alternatively, you can look at a new pit or a cutback in a pit and decrease the toe-to-crest width of the haul road. And essentially, you just bring that entire wall in and you just move less waste. Or you might choose to move more ore. You might keep the same surface footprint and extract more ore from the bottom of the mine. Right. So that the impacts on the economics of any pit of any decent scale that you apply this to can be really significant. And of course, you're reducing the energy used per unit of production. So if you're talking about reducing emissions, you might be reducing the digging and haulage cost of your ore by carbon content of your ore by 2 or 3% within an operation, which is pretty big bickies when you talk about the amount of fuel that we consume on mine sites.
This, I mean, I guess this is similar to your other product, because it almost seems like I'm kind of picturing myself standing at a mine, you know, I'm at a mine and you show up with this, I'd kind of be like, where was that 20 years ago? Like, it's once you've made, I mean, you must have some people that the sell to them must not be very difficult. You must just see it and go, oh yeah, bring that in.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly makes sense. Any mining engineer or geotechnical engineer can immediately see the value. The challenge that we have is within the bureaucracy of companies and of the stock exchange systems that restrict innovation. So that, you know, they're just cultural, social features that make it difficult for this product to actually quickly be adopted. So it has to take a little bit of time. That, you know, typical sort of 7 to 10 year time frame is what we'll see with this product. Because of because we have to change that mindset. Who's responsible for a step change improvement on a mine site? No one on the mine site, because the people on the mine site are responsible for meeting guidance, right? They're responsible for achieving budget. When you invest in a step change on a mine site, nobody's interested in that. In fact, you know, you can be penalized by investors with a result that improves your economics by some large margin within a given period. They'll get upset at you, even though you've just given them, you know, more profit and more production. They'll get upset because you didn't do what you said you'd do. Right. So all of that KPI work that's being done on mine sites is all around meeting the budget that we committed to last year.
Did you understand that when you were bringing this product to market? Did you know that that would be the challenge? From your experience with LadderTube, did you already have some concept that you'd run into that, or was it a little bit of a surprise?
I knew that it would be there, but it has been a surprise that it's taken so long to really sort of change. Now, I say so long. We've supplied this Edge Protector product to four different countries, some quite large companies, and they're using it, and they're using it gently. They're just saying, hey, look, we can create some space here with this. Right. We can improve safety here with this. But the decision to actually implement it on a ramp is actually a big commitment. It really is a big commitment. So a decision needs to be made high up about why we're doing this and what's the ultimate value that we're going to get. Yes, it is really large. In some cases, it's ridiculously large. But we have to know for sure that it's going to work because we can't rely on looking at some other site that's done it and saying, well, it worked for them, it'll work for us. Yeah. We have to be the ones that made the decision, so we can't get it wrong. Like a typical mining company executives and managers don't get rewarded for taking technology risks, right? They get penalized if they fail.
Right. Yep.
Okay. So we don't have that culture that you would have in a software company or such. Yeah. They really don't get rewarded for taking risks and failing.
Yeah.
So they need to make sure they get it right.
Yeah, it's a very interesting point. I just want to circle back to LadderTube for a second because it sort of struck me that, I guess, do you see a world, though, at some point where this does become the standard? Would that ever happen where they go, no, you can't do an escape system like that here in, let's say, Canada, where you have all these high standards and they go, you're monitoring this, you got someone having to check it, like that's... Do you ever see a government actually saying, no, you have to have something like this in place?
It's with the ladders, I don't think so. Mm. They might start requiring specific features such as the fall arrest system. So pretty much all other escapeway ladders underground don't have fall arrest. Whereas, and the reason is because the cable is exposed to the environment. So you'll get water building up on it. So it might corrode. You'll get dirt and dust building up on it. So you won't be able to get your device through it. Whereas for us, because it's sealed, we've always installed that fall arrest system within the escapeway. So by having that fall arrest piece as a requirement, for example, that could be a way that a legislator might say, you know what? Make sure you've got fall arrest in here because we can see all these fatalities that have happened in our country and around the world because they didn't have fall arrest here. You're going to have it.
Yeah,
that could happen, but I don't think they would do something that would highlight a particular commercial offering above others. They would just have specific requirements.
Well, if I ever have any legislative power, which I'm almost guaranteeing you will never happen, I would certainly be looking at that.
Good on you. I'll vote for you, mate.
I'd be careful in saying that. I want to talk a little bit, if you don't mind, about some of the expansion that you're doing, because we've covered a couple of your key products, and I know that's definitely a mainstay for you, but you've stepped into a little bit into the EV world as well. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so it's... How did we come about? It doesn't make much sense to have a plastics manufacturing company building electric vehicles, right? I mean, most people go, there's no synergy there. Why would you do that? Well, we didn't know how to manufacture plastics when we started manufacturing plastics either, right? But the point is, it's the same end result. We're improving mine safety and health. The benefits of electric vehicles in underground mining, are really, really large. And the theoretical benefits are really, really large. The safety improvements that we can make are really, really large. The health environment is huge. Mm. The reduction in emissions by the operation, because we can reduce the ventilation pressure and improve efficiency. It's so, so large as to be really worth doing. And we started doing this 4 years ago. And at that time, it was not obvious to anybody in our industry here in Australia that this was going to be a change that would happen anytime soon. You know, Teslas were around on the roads here, but only a handful. And people really didn't have their eye on battery electric technology for underground. So it was not an obvious concept. But because the value is so large and the health and safety improvements are there, that's why we decided to invest in it. And to begin with, we really thought, okay, let's just do one and prove that it can be done and that it can work in the environment. Maybe we'll end up building EVs down the track. But we can prove it with some help. And so we worked with a number of different companies to prove that concept. And by the time we proved it, the excitement that was on the faces of the people that drove that vehicle underground in mines in Australia was just so large. And the ramp up in rhetoric around reducing emissions by mining companies and the excitement around EVs more generally was really starting to get up there. I mean, it's happened so fast over the last 4 or 5 years. It's been amazing. So now we are actually planning to become an OEM of electric mining vehicles.
That I think it's called Bertana. I think it's actually the same as the logo behind you there. Can you tell us a little bit, just a little bit about the specifications of that vehicle? I mean, it's a beautiful looking vehicle. I would drive this, but can you just talk a little bit more about it?
Yeah, sure. The Bertana EV is a medium goods class four-wheel drive truck. So dimensions wise, it's about the same size as a Toyota Land Cruiser or a Ford F-150. It's a decent size four-wheel drive, but it's not huge. Mm-hmm. But it's got a 5.7 ton gross vehicle mass. So it's a very, very heavy duty sort of vehicle. Yeah. It's got a payload of about 2 ton on the back of that vehicle. So the reason we didn't design and build the body and chassis. We've borrowed that from a company in Brazil called Agrale. And that company makes buses, trucks, tractors, and this product called the Agrale Marua. And it's a four-wheel drive, diesel-powered four-wheel drive, mostly used in military applications. Mm. So that body and chassis was perfect for us because in those military applications, in Brazil, they're typically driving these vehicles off-road and a lot of permanently in four-wheel drive, low range, in really muddy, hilly terrain. So they have to be really corrosion resistant. They have to be really tough and rugged, and they have to be maintainable in the field. Well, that's perfect for the mining industry. Mm-hmm. And so that what you have is you've got a very heavy chassis, completely sealed. The body itself is also quite heavy. The panels are all galvanized inside and out, which is unique. So by borrowing that body and chassis, we import that body and chassis into Australia with no engine in it, with modifications made at the design stage to receive batteries and electric motors instead of receiving internal combustion equipment. And then we assemble the built EV here in Australia. So it's an incredibly impressive off-road vehicle, and it will be road registrable if we're successful. It's our intention to make them road registrable. But in reality, they're not going to compete with a Rivian or a Tesla for a off-road enthusiast's point of view. What we've done is tried to design something that will last a very, very long time in an underground mine.
Right.
Driving through corrosive mud, being used continuously. That's the approach that we've taken with this vehicle.
I have to say, it's, when you're talking, Steve, it's a long way to come from someone who wanted someone else to do it to now you're getting into the EV space. You've done the ladder tube systems and the the brand of the other one, the Edge Protector. What is it for you? I mean, it's of course, there's success and ambition and that sort of things, but I mean, you've got to be passionate about what you're doing to sort of keep tackling. I mean, these aren't easy things to tackle. So what is it for you that kind of gets you up in the morning and gets at it?
I think at the core of it, Jared, I said before, I'm a mining engineer. I received a mining engineer degree, but then I went on and worked in operations, not as a technical engineer. And that underground mine, I worked in open pits, I worked in tunneling. Most of my time on the tools was underground, and I just loved it. I still do. I still get to go down there and do some work from time to time, and I just love it. The types of people that we work with in this industry, the way that they get about doing the job in the environment they're working in, it's just so much fun. It is just so much fun. But there are inherent risks in that mining environment with respect to geotechnical issues, with respect to heavy equipment, et cetera, et cetera. They're there, and you can't eliminate them completely without a massive change to the way that you do things. My family, my next generation, my parents' generation, none of them worked in the mining industry. And coming from a town like Kalgoorlie, it's like having an entire generation in Timmins or, one of these other mining towns not work in mining. Makes no sense, right? It's because both of my grandfathers died before they were grandparents working in underground mines. Mm. One from silicosis and the other one from an accident, like a mobile equipment accident. So that's why that entire generation, no mining.
You don't actually hear that very many. You being in the mining, most people, their parents, like my father coming from the mining world, his father worked on equipment. It's usually what it seems to be.
I'm passionate about these people that work in the underground mining industry, particularly underground, but also other parts of the mining industry. There are so many ways we can improve safety and health outcomes on mine sites. So many. The ones we're dealing with are just the tip of the iceberg.
Right.
But it's important. And that's, you asked how do I, what do I get excited? It's fun. It's fun delivering change. It's hard, but it's fun, and everybody feels good about it. So the types of people I get to work with in my business stay for a long time because it's fun. We really enjoy improving the situation, and we get thanked for it by our customers. Mm-hmm. And so it's fun. And at the end of the day, that actually really matters.
It's a great answer, and it of course leads me to the days that are a little bit harder. Like when you have the tough days, you get the no from the contract you thought you were going to get, and I'm sure like any of us in business, you've had those days, or an important member of your team moves on to something else, or any of these things that happen. How do you sort of manage that? And I'm asking, I'm sort of digging into your sort of personal feelings, but I know that a lot of people who are trying to build companies and, I actually did an interview earlier this morning and, I was talking about sort of what keeps him going and motivates him, and now asking you the same. And to add to that is those bad days. How do you sort of approach it?
Yeah, if we're being offended by somebody with a bad opinion, or we don't win a job for a reason that we don't understand or something like that. Yeah. It affects you for sure. But I've got very good at acceptance basically. So you feel it and then you go, oh, well, on to the next thing. Cause you can't change it, right? Like you can't, there's no point wasting time getting all upset and angry about it. So I feel that I might feel the anger or I might feel the disappointment but very quickly I just drop it and get back to work. Mm-hmm. And I think if you can't do that, you're probably going to be a fairly stressed out individual.
Yeah.
We have to be able to drop it. Now it's a bit harder when it comes to people, particularly people in your organization that you're close to, that you're really excited about helping when their life goes in a different direction. That takes a little bit longer, but it's still the same process. You still get, well, hang on, you want the best for them.
Yeah.
Accept it. They've made a decision. Whether Whether their decision is right or wrong from their point of view, no one will ever know. You know, it's a decision at a point in time. Let them go. And yeah, so it's you just can't waste your energy on it, Jared. Mm-hmm.
No, it's true, and you do. I started to say to people a couple of years ago, and this is not when our, you know, this wasn't coming from a position where everything was going great at the company at the time. I started saying it, but I started to realize when you have your own company, and you know, it's hard. But I've seen business owners and founders, and they're bordering on bitter. You know, they when you ask them how business is, it's always bad, no matter how good it is. And I just made a conscious choice to just stop doing it, because it's sort of giving off this vibe. I think there's actually a subtle thing where it's like they don't want you to think that, you know, like almost like there's life is better, but life is better when you've taken a chance and you've built a team and you get to sort of, it's not freedom in that you can take 2 months off. You can't do that. But there's this freedom in that you can actually figure out what's the best move, and then you can put yourself behind it and you can really affect change. I mean, it's a very privileged place to be in.
Oh, it absolutely is. And it is luck. It depends how you define the word luck, right? But I actually feel that it's luck. Some people say, oh yeah, you're amazing. You've done this. Yeah, but it could have failed any number of ways along the way. Yeah, you know, it could all be gone tomorrow. Mm-hmm. All it takes is one really big mistake.
Yeah,
and then it's finished. It's gone. And if I actually thought that I had control over that, I wouldn't sleep, because I'd be working 24 hours a day.
That's a great point.
Trying to squeeze control over a situation that in reality I do not have control over. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, we may continue to have success. We will keep taking risks. We will keep trying to improve, you know, safety and health outcomes in the mining industry. But that doesn't mean that we're always going to be here. Like at any point in time, a really big event could occur and that's the end of it. And that's okay. If that happens, it happens.
Yeah.
You cannot control the situation to that extent. It's impossible. Yeah.
But it sure is worth taking shots. Yeah. There is. I was actually curious sort of as we wrap up the show too, is when you're, you know, how do you decide? I'm sure these aren't the only ideas you've had. How do you sort of filter out what to take on, what to tackle? I mean, it does take time, it takes money, it takes your people getting on board, all these sort of things. As stuff sort of comes across in front of you and ideas pop up and all that sort of, how do you sort of filter it out? Or how did you decide these three verticals that we've looked at today? How did you decide to pursue them and not to pursue other things?
If we're not improving health and safety outcomes, then we're not doing it. There's lots of other businesses that can develop good ideas, and they can do anything. So we have to have that as part of as part of a product. If a product is going to improve the economic outcome that it's replacing, or that it's if it's not replacing anything, if it's new, it has to have some efficiency / economic benefit. Mm-hmm. Because if it doesn't, you can't sell it. To be honest, like everybody wants to improve safety, but it's, you know, it's blinkers on. People are busy. A new thing, new is hard. What's the benefit? It's improved safety. Well, you say it improves safety, but yeah, until it's actually proven, how do we know? Well, you need to have this improvement in efficiency and cost, right? So we do that. And theoretically, you can have a product that improves safety and improves cost. And it can be clear that is the case. But if the person choosing to purchase that product has no association with the actual benefit of the product within the operation, you'll never sell it. Mm-hmm. So for example, I see so many great ideas that improve a process that's done underground by service crew workers, project crew workers. There's a concept that will improve their safety and reduce the time it takes to do a task. Mm-hmm. And the cost of the product is low, but the development cost is high. The problem is, who buys it? Well, the purchasing officer. There's no engineer involved. There's no safety manager involved in the process of purchasing that component. It goes to purchasing. With respect to purchasing, they can't feel the benefit of a 2 cent increase in that part that improves, you know, $20 the cost of actually installing that part. They don't see the installation cost because that's done already. Like we, as far as they're concerned, it's already in place. That happens a lot. So you need to know that you've got a commercial buyer is also your technical buyer. If they're the same person in an organization, right, or they're very close to each other, then you've got a real chance. And then you do your research. You communicate with them. You find out, you know, how big of a problem is this. And there's a lot of people in our organization that are miners, that are either worked underground, worked in open pits, mining engineers, shift bosses, all these sorts of different positions. They understand the culture issues around why decisions get made. They understand the hierarchies. They understand the language. They understand the technical problems that they've had to deal with when they were working in those mines. Mm-hmm. And that really does help us to filter out whether we believe a product is actually going to hit the mark.
And it's a little tongue in cheek, but I'm sure you get some ideas suggested to people that are not in the mining industry that solve a problem that they don't quite understand, just in the nature of your business. I'm sure you get a fair amount of that. Eh?
Yeah, we do. We do get a lot of that. And I try to foster talking about those things because I want people to think outside the box because, yeah, you know, the education system teaches us to not look outside the box, right? It locks us in. And then it's pretty hard once you become an adult to reinvent yourself as a creative technical thinker. It's difficult because the system doesn't really harness that. So when people come with ideas, even if they're not very good, I'd rather sit down and really run through the genesis of it and you know, help them to understand that what they did by understanding how it was being used and by noticing the time saving that there would be, or et cetera, that's fantastic. This is the reason why it's going to be really difficult for you to make that work. And it'll be usually it's that commercial buyer, technical buyer element.
Right. Okay. No, it's very interesting. Just what you're doing, you know, as a company. I mean, I come from a very physical equipment background, so I kind of have a biased Gowdy. Usually, I refer to Gowdy at this point in the interview as we wrap up. But you know, Gowdy's seen it that just those physical things like the ladder tube. It's, you know, it's a physical touching thing that you can do as opposed to the technology, which is a little out of my realm. And I do a lot of those shows. So it's fun for me to sort of get a chance to talk about this. Last question before we wrap up. What is your distribution model? Like, if you know, we had a show on just recently, and I saw all these people were watching from South Africa and like the Netherlands, and it was like, and they were watching for a long time, like 20 minutes. So I know we've got people sort of all over the world watching now. If somebody is in these locations and wants to talk to you, sort of what's the supply chain process of working with you?
We supply directly to mining customers, okay, around the world. We have gone through other companies, whether they be primary contractors on site or local service providers, supporting engagement with mining companies, but the products that we've got do have a technical sale element, and so we try to retain the discussion part, to the understanding the problem, the showing the solution part. But we do have agents, people who work with us to create opportunities in different regions, and we're always looking for more help in that regard. But ultimately, you know, it's important to us that we supply to the customer the specific information that they need.
Okay. And like, so if someone wants to go, like I went on your website, and I'll get Gary to bring that up as well. Like if somebody needs to get in touch with you in anything that we've talked about today, they can just go directly through. I see this contact page. You've got a few different numbers from Australia, Europe, Africa. Any of those channels are a way to directly do business with you.
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay, thanks. Thank you a lot, Steve, for coming on the show. I really enjoyed it. I hope you come back. I it's very apparent that you're one of these companies. It's not going to stop at just one thing. So I'm sure there'll be lots to talk about later on, and I hope you join us again.
No worries. That's great, Jared. And I really appreciate the opportunity. These long-form conversations are really rich, I believe. Good value for the industry.
Yeah, we've had people... you know, it's, we've had people want to do them for 4 or 5 minutes, and I just go, you know, there's lots of commercials and production. There's lots of ways to do that. But for us, we want to flush out ideas and talk about things and people to leave educated, not just with a product promoted to them, but a mixture of both. So yeah. And thanks for joining and actually going through the process of having a full discussion.
No worries. Thank you.
And thank you, everybody, for watching this another episode of Mining Now. Thank you to CIM. Please go check out Safe Escape. Their website, there'll be plenty of links, but it's safeescape.com. And they've got all their products listed, really nicely laid out. There's very direct access to them on their website as well. So thank you, everybody, for watching. Please keep suggesting guests. I mean, you see the amount of different people now coming from all over the world. And that's because of people like you bringing us guests, recommending. We really appreciate it. Please keep it up. And we'll see you on the next episode of Mining Now.